From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Gemma Gaudette. More Idaho Matters right now. Not so long ago, thousands of people traveled from the East Coast to the West Coast on horses and covered wagons, looking for gold or land or just for a better life. Well, those that come to or through Idaho followed the Oregon Trail, which at times was just a set of ruts through tall grass. The Oregon-California Trails Association works to preserve the trail and to educate people about the history behind them. Author Jerry Eichhorst is the president of the Idaho chapter, and he'll be talking about the Oregon Trail on Monday at the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute. And he joins us now to talk more. Welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
So, Jerry, the Oregon Trail, first off, I mean, most people know what it is, but in case they don't, tell us quickly about that. But it's not just one path, correct?
Well, the Oregon Trail was a way for people to migrate from the Midwest on the Missouri River to the Pacific Coast. The Oregon Trail went across the states and ended up in Oregon. You also had branches that went down to California. You had alternative routes that developed over the years. And we in Idaho are blessed because we have hundreds of miles of original ruts that are still remaining from these paths across the country.
So talk a little bit about where the Oregon Trail is here in Idaho.
So in Idaho, it starts in southeastern Idaho, east of Montpelier. And it climbs over what's known as Big Hill, then goes north up the Bear River Valley, crosses over Mount Putnam down into the Snake River Valley, where Fort Hall was located. It then follows the south side of the Snake River down to Glens Ferry, where the immigrants would ford the Snake River at Three Island Crossing, and then follow along the base of the foothills to the Boise River. It would then go down the Boise River to Fort Boise, which was located at the mouth of the Boise River, and cross back into what's now Oregon and continue to the northwest on into Oregon City. So it had several hundred miles of travel in Idaho. It was very dusty. It was very rocky. It was very hot usually because they were here in July and August. And we're blessed that a lot of those ruts still remain.
So can we talk a little bit about those ruts? Because the trail isn't like a modern day road that we see. So, you know, when you say, you know, it was ruts and all of that, can you kind of describe that? But also then the difficulty for immigrants who were heading out west.
Okay. So if you picture a wagon being pulled by a team of oxen, two or four oxen usually, the people are walking along beside the wagon or behind the wagon. As the wheels go across the desert of Idaho, they kick up dust. It's generally windy in southern Idaho, so the dust blows away, and it leaves what's called a rut or a swale, a depression in the ground where these wagons went. Because Idaho was covered in sagebrush, it tended to be a single file line across the desert of Idaho. And so you have this swale or these ruts going across the state, and things don't grow in them as well. The ground was packed so hard that in most places, even today, crops won't grow as well. They won't have as much sagebrush that's grown back into them. So they're very visible out in the field. You can see them from satellite photos. You can get out and walk in those ruts. And it was a challenge for the immigrants because it was a 2,000-mile journey from the Missouri River at Independence or St. Joe to get out to the Pacific Coast. There were not a lot of places to restock your supplies. Fort Hall had some, Fort Boise had some more, but most of those places were very expensive and they had very limited number of supplies. So you pretty much had to pack everything into the wagon that you planned to use for that 6-month journey and then hope for the best on the way.
So your group collects everything, right? From, I mean, we're talking from maps to photographs, to stories of people who made the trip. Can you talk to us a little bit maybe about one of the stories that sticks out to you?
Why, sure. I'm a diary collector and researcher. I have over 3,000 accounts of people who traveled in Idaho. And I compile those by location and then by date, so I can get the best of the stories at each location. And that, to me, is what's fascinating about the Oregon Trail, is the stories of the immigrants. If you take a specific person and you read their diary from beginning to end, it may have some interesting quotes in it. It may not. Women tended to write better diaries, more passionate, more emotion. But some of the men wrote very long, extensive diaries as well. But by compiling these by location, I get the best of the stories. And that's what I put into my presentations. One of my favorite stories is from over in eastern Idaho in the Soda Springs area. There was a spring called Steamboat Springs. And it had a small opening about 6 inches in diameter next to where the water came up. And as the pressure of the water built up, it would emit hot gas out of this opening and it would whistle like a steamboat, hence the name. Well, the water would come up 2 to 3 feet in height every 15 to 20 seconds. And there was a guy that decided he was going to sit on this spring and plug it up, keep it from coming up. So when it drops down, he drops his pants and sits down on the spring. As the pressure starts to build up, he starts to be bounced around. His friends grab his hands and his feet and try to hold him down, and they can't do it. He's bobbing around like a cork. And after a little bit of this, he finally says, "I give up, guys. It can't be did. I'm beaten to beefsteak."
I love it. So, Jerry, what kind of shape is the Oregon Trail in right now?
Much of the Oregon Trail is nearly as pristine as it was in the days that the immigrants traveled it 170 years ago. Other parts of it have been totally destroyed due to agriculture, farming, due to housing development. If you look at what's in the Boise Valley, there's remnants of the trail up to Bonneville Point. Coming down from Bonneville Point to the Boise River, all of that's been driven on. It's been used as a road for vehicles, bicycles, hikers, and everything. So it's no longer pristine at all. But going west from Boise, for example, there are no remnants of the Oregon Trail. Basically, until you get into Oregon on the Lytle Boulevard towards Keeney Pass area, everything's been destroyed due to agriculture, road building. There's not anything left. There's a lot of areas that are still pristine. There's a lot of areas that are threatened, either by power projects such as wind turbine farms or power line projects, or housing developments. There are several places in Elmore County, for example, that are on the Oregon Trail that there's plans to build housing developments. And unfortunately, whatever's left of the trail in those areas will likely be destroyed when those housing developments get put in.
So with that said, Jerry, how does your group work to try to preserve the trail?
Well, we go out and we identify where the trail is, and we'll map that trail, and we share that information with groups such as the National Park Service Trails Office, who we work closely with, or the BLM, who we work closely with. And for example, to the BLM, we'll give the maps of where the trail is so they can put it into their documentation for when they have to go out and fight fires. So they know where the trail is and they'll try to preserve the trail. We had an incident many years ago where the North Alternate and the Kelton Road, climbing up King Hill north of Glens Ferry, that route was actually used as a fire break. They bulldozed down the hill and destroyed the remnants of the trail in that area, not realizing that it was a historic resource. And so I went out with the BLM and we walked that section and identified where it was and try to share that information with them so they can put it into their fire guides and not have that type of incident happen again.
How important is it to keep this history alive and not just, you know, being able to tell the stories, right? But being able to go out and actually physically still have remnants of the Oregon Trail?
I think it's very important. If you look at the migration of people in the mid 1800s going to the Pacific coast, there were 300,000 people plus, you know, 50,000 going to Oregon, 250,000 going to California. That was a huge percentage of the population, and it helped settle the West Coast, and in the case of Oregon, put enough people into it that it became a U.S. state instead of potentially a British area. It's important in my mind that people understand that history, both the good and the bad of that history. You know, it was an adventure for all these people going west. It was also a challenge. It was a very painful experience for the Native Americans in the area. The coming of the white man destroyed the life of the Native Indians in the area. But it's important to understand that history, to recognize that history, to not make the same mistakes that we did back then. And by going out and walking in these ruts, to actually travel in the footsteps of the pioneers, to read a diary quote at a point, for instance, climbing King Hill, there's a woman who writes about, we climbed to the top of the hill only to find that we have another hill to climb. I can take you exactly to that point, and you can feel the same thing that she felt as you hike up that hill. That to me is what makes it interesting, is when you can see the things and feel what they were feeling as they made that trek across the country.
Mm-hmm. Well, Jerry, I want to thank you so much for taking time to talk with us today about this. Really appreciate it.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
We've been speaking with author Jerry Eichhorst, president of the Idaho chapter of the Oregon-California Trails Association. He'll be talking about the Oregon Trail Monday at the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute in Boise. Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story. Now, we're taking center stage. Introducing NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, a collection of Black-led stories from NPR's podcasts. Search NPR Black Stories, Black Truths wherever you get your podcasts.